You are listening live to the program.
Brought to you by Worth Harley-Davidson North, I-29 in Tiffany Springs. Why the hell not? You're worth it.
Your teams, your town, your program.
We're talking to Brady Singer here. You mentioned TV. Mm-hmm. You all watch The Bachelor. We found that out.
Yeah, that wasn't supposed to come out. That was not supposed to be said. I don't know why it was said, but I wasn't as locked in as Lynch and Coar. Lynch and Coar were locked in, and I was kind of just laughing at, you know, how they were acting and
right,
and how staged it is. Honestly, it's completely fake, I feel like. But that's just me.
4-point lead here for Texas Tech. And moments ago, Bruce Weber and Freddie Ejada getting into it. We're going into the huddle.
What was to that, and what was your reaction?
Great passion, great energy in the bench, trying to play hard, trying to get them to play at a high level.
Miscommunication there. Jada takes advantage, and Jada with the razzle-dazzle, and doesn't work out too well for him.
So there wasn't, like, any bad blood there or anything?
They're trying to compete. Everyone wants to do well. That's just part of it.
And now, with great passion and great energy, Seren Petro.
Right you are, Kay. Right you are. Petro in the program on Sports Radio 810 WHP. Thank you for joining us here on our final day from Surprise, Arizona, spring training home of your Kansas City Royals, as they've got a lot of work to do. They'll play their first game tomorrow. Have an inter-squad today going on, probably finishing up right now, by the way, on the other fields as we speak. So we've got a lot of Royals baseball coming your way. Let's see, we're going to hear from Mike Matheny, right? That's coming up probably in our next segment, if I'm not mistaken. We are going to hear from one Brad Keller, one Ryan O'Hearn, one Hunter Dozier, one Blair Kirchhoff. Not sure why he's in uniform out here in Surprise, but he is. That was interesting.
Man of many talents.
Double zero. I don't know what that means either.
Couple of weeks late for fantasy camp, but whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Just throw him in there. Let's see what he's got. Let's see what the wily veteran can do. Now we'll talk some college basketball with Blair Kirchhoff in the 4 o'clock hour, and then at 5 o'clock, Dayton Moore to join us. Dayton Moore. Some people might call him the president of the Kansas City Royals. They'd be wrong.
Who would do a thing like that?
I don't know. Who's got two thumbs, a weight problem, and a flight home to Kansas City tonight? Oh, this guy.
But before you get to the flight home, I was like, oh,
yeah.
Me?
Lebo?
Most people in this? Well, Jed's not. But
in our listening.
Jed's kind of skinny fat.
Yeah, he is. True. That's a good point. We'll get to Dayton Moore in the 5 o'clock hour, and we'll probably come home. We'll see what else we can get done. We might come home with some conversations to play later on. Let's do start with what we heard there. Bruce Weber, I'll give it to you again. Just Bruce Weber's comments about the, I don't know, you call it an incident that went viral. The confrontation between Cartier-Jada and Bruce Weber. I don't want to make too much out of this, but it was the thing that everybody was talking about in-game, and it was not what you normally see between coach and player. Cartier-Jada clapping back at Bruce Weber, then missing a dunk. It just was not what you'd normally like to see, and I think everybody knew it wasn't something they normally see. That's why everybody was talking about it on Twitter. And so afterwards, after the game, of course, Bruce Weber has got to answer the music, if you will, answer the questions. And Kellis Robinette of The Star asked Weber what the exchange was about with Jada.
Great passion, great energy in the bench, trying to play hard, trying to get them to play at a high level.
So there wasn't, like, any bad blood there or anything?
They're trying to compete. Everyone wants to do well. That's just part of it.
Couple things that jump out at me on this. Again, I don't want to make too big a deal out of it because I don't think it's the end of the world. And I think it certainly looks a lot better, the optics on it, or at least what the expectation is moving forward. The optics on it look a lot better, especially when Cartier-Jada takes to Instagram and says, hey, Coach Webb, he's my guy, and Emaw, I got Emaw tattooed on my skin, kind of basically saying, hey, I'm a Wildcat,
Mm-hmm.
That certainly I think makes it look better. And is better that he does that. I mean, if there was real anger and frustration moving forward, passionate anger and frustration, if he was going to storm off campus never to return again, he wouldn't have done that. So you see after the game that Bruce Weber has a cool head and tries to say the right thing. You see on Instagram that Cartier Jonas is the right thing. I don't think this is going to be a big deal. One, because they ain't going anywhere anyway. Right? Who really cares?
Right.
What is this, going to torpedo a season that was already torpedoed? I mean,
yeah, they're 2-11.
Yeah, the season is plummeting to the bottom of the ocean already. The sub is sunk. Yeah, it doesn't matter if you hit it with a couple of more torpedoes. Doesn't matter the season itself. Now the program lives on beyond this season, and you can do damage to a program that will create harm moving forward. I don't think that's been done either. But I will say this. We knew this was going to be a rebuild year. We knew it was going to be a step back year for the Cats to hopefully then take two or three steps back to maybe take a step forward next year, maybe a couple steps forward the year after, that it might take a couple of years before they were back to what they were, contending for a league championship and winning a league championship last year, being an Elite Eight team a couple of years ago. It was going to take some time. We all knew that. But here we sit again. With Bruce Weber being sideways with a player, we know he got sideways with Marcus Foster. He ended up transferring up to Creighton, and that kind of that was a class or maybe a group of kids that he didn't really enjoy coaching. They didn't really enjoy being coached by him, and off they went. Is that going on now at K-State? And is it not only a year where you knew you lost three seniors that were really important to what you were doing as a program, but you also now have what was supposed to be part of the next wave, and John is a junior that Bruce Weber is not communicating well with, is not getting along with, and is not buying into what Bruce Weber wants to do. That's a bigger picture, and that's a question that has to be asked, and only Bruce Weber and his kids and his staff can answer that question. But you have to wonder, and you're kidding yourself if you don't at least wonder. If you think I'm out of line for even bringing this up, then you have blind allegiance and you're a cheerleader, which is fine. You can root for your school and your team however you want. You don't have to come at it from an analytic, approach. You're a fan. Be fanatical about your club however you want, whether that's super supportive or always frustrated and negative. That's up to you. That's your choice. But I'm going to tell you that question needs to be asked here, and this is not how you want to wrap up a season that hasn't gone well, that even though you knew it wasn't going to be very good, it's probably gone worse than you really thought it would, because even though other people were picking them 9th or 10th, I think K-State fans were probably thinking, you know what? 6th, 7th, NIT, maybe we dream NCAA for a while, but we end up in the NIT.
Play up a few spots like we always do.
Yes, I don't think they were thinking crash and burn and then kind of have the wheels come off coming down the stretch. And so, I think that's important. Is Bruce Weber, if this is the second time in what year was Marcus Foster at K-State? Before Wade and all those guys, so roughly, 7-8 years ago.
Yep. I'll find out here.
If every 8 years he's got a kid he doesn't connect with, that's an issue. Now, I think this just was a heat of the moment type of thing. I don't think it's signs that the program is crumbling. Everyone, there's a lot of appreciation for the talent level, the freshmen that are on this team, and there's a feeling that the next recruiting class is going to be really good. The star rankings next to their name say that they're going to be a really good recruiting class for K-State. Not necessarily that it's not Kentucky, right? Take it in context. It's a good class for K-State basketball, and one that Bruce Weber can continue to build a team around, along with this freshman class that people like a lot of the talents that they've got. But it's not good. There's no way for you to spin to me that this was a good situation for Bruce Weber and K-State basketball.
Yeah,
simple as that.
And it needs to be. I mean, with Foster, by the way, he was the 14 and 15 seasons were his two seasons at K-State. So you have those years right. There were multiple instances, in my recollection is, this is the first time that we've seen something like this with to this level with Jada. I mean, it's if the rest of the season plays out and that didn't happen again, and there's some sense of harmony between player and coach, then we can say, okay, last night was the way the two men played it up or stated it was. Weber saying it was high energy and competition, and Jada saying it was just a miscommunication. I was telling Coach this, and then we wash it. Now, if this pops off again in a week or a week and a half, or you know, in Big 12 tournament, there's something else going on, well, then we have to reexamine what happened last night. But to this point, I guess you can say, until further notice, it's under review, I guess. We haven't exactly said what last night was, but you know, they say the future tells you what the past is all about. So we'll see what happens the rest of this year.
So let me give you the next level of it. Fran Fraschilla said that Cartier Jada needs to focus more on this team now and not on his future, right? Not on his pro career.
Mm-hmm.
Where would Fran Fraschilla have gotten such an idea? How would Fran Fraschilla know that, first of all? Can you tell it just by watching the basketball team?
Yeah. I think it's probably from the guy we're talking about. It's from Bruce Weber.
Right. So wait a minute. Yeah. Well, thank you. So let me ask the question again, because I think you know where I'm going with this, and you didn't hear the question right.
Ah, I didn't.
Is that something you can glean just by watching the game?
No.
No, I don't think so.
No, no chance.
That, yeah, exactly. You glean that because you talk to Bruce Weber. Okay.
Yeah.
Fran Fraschilla comes to that conclusion because he does his job and he does it well, and he gets to know the coaches around the Big 12. They trust him. We know that sometimes people coach through the media, right? Manage through the media. Want to send a message to a player, you let some information get out there and let him see it in big bold print in the paper, or hear it on the radio in the talk show, or see it on the TV at the nightly sports part of the equation. That happens, and I think that's what's occurred here. I think that information from Bruce Weber was given to Fran Fraschilla. I think Fran Fraschilla talks to Bruce Weber. I think that cut played again, Jed. Oh, I caught him. I got him.
Ask Fran Fraschilla about it.
You know, Fran, I don't even remember what call it was he didn't like and was, you know, saying as he was leaving the stage. I think it was after a KU game and didn't get a foul call he wanted or something like that. And, you know, ask Fran Fraschilla about it. Well, he's saying that because he talked to Fran Fraschilla about it after the game. And Fran Fraschilla said something to him like, wow, you got hosed on that call. You know, so he's saying ask Fran Fraschilla about it. That's what that was at that time. Well, at this time, it's clear those two have a relationship, as they should, for Fran Fraschilla to do his job. But Bruce Weber, I'm sure, like, that huddle is supposed to be us, right? That's our team, our guys, here we are. And coach talks to players and gives the directions, and then the players take those directions and they go and they execute. It's not supposed to be clapping back at the head coach. It's not supposed to be showing up the head coach, which is exactly what Jada did. And my point is, I wonder if Jada doesn't like Fran Fraschilla talking about information that I personally think could only have come from Bruce Weber. And if Bruce Weber is in their program building and team building and saying, listen, it's just us in this room. You look around. It's these coaches, these trainers, these players. You know, we're the only ones we can count on. It's us against the world, right? And you got to be committed to everyone in here. And you got to have each other's back. And you got to work hard. And you got to make the extra pass. And you got to take the charge for your teammate. And you got to be at the early morning workouts. And you got to, you know, get the class. And you got to do those things so you don't let anybody down in this room. And then Fran Fraschilla is quoting things that perhaps Bruce Weber has said to Cartier Jada himself. Listen, quit worrying about your pro career and focus on this team. And then if he hears Fran Fraschilla say that, where do you think Cartier Jada thought it came from?
Yeah.
And so that's one of the things that you've got to be really careful as a coach. You know, you may be trying to motivate from the media, but you can't sell it's just us in this room. And then for the coach, it's just us, and my buddy Fran Fraschilla. Something to consider. I cannot tell you for a fact that that's how it went down, but we've talked a lot over the years that we don't just study the athletes. We don't just study the teams, the coaches, the players. You study the media around them. And if you study Fran Fraschilla, he doesn't throw darts. He's not guessing. And he's getting his information from somewhere, okay? And I don't think it's the SID at K-State.
Right. Yeah.
Okay? And I don't think it's from the camp. Yeah, and I don't think it's from the campus newspaper. that Fran Fraschilla is getting his information. So if Fran Fraschilla is questioning the motivation of a player on a Big 12 team, I feel strongly that the most likely person to have given him that information, and I don't think he's going to question that person's heart unless someone's told him that it needs to be questioned. I don't think Fran Fraschilla is just going to randomly look at it and go, you know, I don't think Doak's given it his all. I think he's kind of just worrying about his pro career. Even if he thought that, I don't think he'd say it on the television because he would be afraid of upsetting Bill Self. He'd be afraid of being wrong, number one.
Yeah.
Number two, he'd be afraid of upsetting his relationship with Coach Self. And so I don't think it'd come out of his mouth unless Coach Self or Curtis Townsend or somebody like that said that to him. And likewise, when he is critical of a K-State player, I don't think it comes out of his mouth unless Bruce Weber told it to him. And we know word got around that Bruce Weber was not happy with Marcus Foster. And I think that's the same thing that's going on here. He is not happy. Doesn't mean that the result will be the same, although I had a number of K-State people text me last night and say, John is playing his last year at K-State. He's got another year. He's only a junior, but he won't be back. That's the conclusion that people are already drawing. Why? Because it looks, smells, and feels a lot like the Marcus Foster situation. So I do think from that standpoint, you got to be careful. You got to be careful if you're a head coach. If you're going to sell, it's us against the world. It can't be us against the world except for when I want to share something with somebody on TV to try to motivate you. You got to motivate them in that room. You got to call him out in front of the players that he's letting down if he's not at practice because he's trying to figure out what agent to hire, or if he's not giving up the ball because he wants to show he's explosive and throw down a dunk instead of taking the layup, or he's not he's taking the jump shot when he should be giving it up on the pick and roll and letting somebody try to get the bucket at the rim. Whatever it is, whatever your frustrations are, it probably should be taken out in that room. It's a useful tool. Coaches can do it. They can use the media and be effective doing it that way. It can be a very effective tool, but you got to be careful. It's also a knife that has two edges to it and can cut both ways. And I'm not so sure that that didn't happen here in Manhattan. Maybe it's over and done, forgotten, and there's no big deal, and Cartier Jada will be back. I won't tell you that Cartier Jada is done in Manhattan because I don't have any knowledge that that be the case. But if he is done, I think it looks a lot like the Marcus Foster situation, which we should point out Bruce Weber rose from, got up, got a new group of kids together, and came back and won a league title and went to an Elite Eight. So it also, if Cartier Jada is gone, does not mean that Bruce Weber is done in Manhattan. It may mean that he's got to hit a reboot, and when they're going to be done with any kind of rebuild at K-State, got moved back a year. That's what it might mean. We'll see. Let's take a break. We'll come back. I want to talk some baseball. Mike Matheny speaking this morning. Talk about some things. We'll hear a little bit. I think we're going to hear all of Ryan O'Hearn later in the program. In fact, next hour, I think Todd Liebel will join us, but we'll give you a snippet of a conversation Todd and I had with him by his locker today in the clubhouse, and talk a little small ball with one of the guys that hits the baseball harder than maybe anybody on the team. That's Ryan O'Hearn. We'll talk about that and hear from Mike Matheny next here in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
He's a big hoss, about a 260-pounder.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Back on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB, Curtis Siebold here. Soren Petro on his final day in Surprise. He's back. Oh, okay. At least he's back. Getting ready to get out of Arizona.
That's right.
There you are.
Yes, here I am. I didn't see the 30. I just saw the yo that was texted to me from Jed.
I did what I was told. I sent the 30 tags.
You did?
I just went ahead and played the music. We got a good 45 seconds of Kid Cudi in.
I like yo.
Yo. That's what I got. I got yo. Not hey, yo.
All caps.
Yeah, so, sorry about that. Yeah, so it is the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Mostly I'm here, usually. This is part of the conversation. Let's have a little conversation about the Kansas City Royals. Let's hear first from, what do you think, Matheny?
Yeah. We'll start with
and then skipper. O'Hearn, which would be better? Or O'Hearn? Okay, he wants to do Matheny and then O'Hearn. So whatever Jed wants, that's what we do here
Jed
in the program.
Jed is running things.
Yeah, Jed Marshall, courtesy of Bolton KC, Soren Petro with you here. In surprise, Mike Matheny today. Listen, the subject I wanted to get with on him is maybe get some thoughts, get a vibe, get his philosophy on the shift. I talked to a number of pitchers out here about the shift and what their vibe is. Do they like it? Do they not like it? All of those kind of things. It's definitely a, I think something that's not going away in baseball, right?
Yeah.
So let's get Mike Matheny's thoughts on it. I asked the manager of the Royals about his philosophy on shifting and whether or not it helps, hurts, how it does help or hurt.
Yeah, and you said it right from the top, Soren. I mean, if our pitchers don't buy in, probably not going to see a shift. But they're going to get a whole lot of information to tell them, here's what we see. This is all the data. But when the guy gets on the rubber, he needs to have conviction about the pitch he's about ready to throw. He needs to have conviction that the defense behind him, one, can get the job done, and two, be in the proper place. So that's I see that evolving over time. I see less resistance now. The information's pretty clear.
Right.
But if a guy has his own individual history or he knows he's attacking a guy in a different way and he believes I've been burnt like this before, can't have him standing up there with a lack of confidence, but we'll just continue to educate.
Is it easier with the younger guys? Like now that is baseball now for young guys, right? So the next wave coming up, that's all they know is a bunch of shifts, or am I wrong?
No. I mean, picture yourself standing on the mound, major league field for 10 years of a career, and all of a sudden you turn around and a guy that you've seen there for all your life is no longer there. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
So it was a tough transition early, especially. But it's great talking with guys, and we've talked about this the entire camp, just the urgency inside this camp, the willingness to what do we got to do. Part of that is let's not be afraid to think outside the box, one, and how guys are used, two, and how we use the data. You're just looking for any competitive edge we can get. If you guys are up for that, we'll always have a why. It's not like, hey, the rest of the league's doing it. If that's it, they shouldn't buy in. But if there's some data that will support, let's think about this a little bit different, not just because it's been done like this forever. Let's think about this, and can we do something different to help you? And if they buy into that, then we go. If not, we just keep talking.
Is there to flip it around when you're offensively and they're putting the shift on your guys? I know every guy's a case by case. Kind of like you said, a pitcher, you don't want him up there not being confident. Same thing with a hitter. But does the organization, you got everybody out here. You got the minor leaguers. You got a guy who's a dead pole. Is there a focus now on saying, hey, and you got to have a bunt in the bag as well that you can, back the shift off a little bit? Does the game change that way? We're now a big, strong pull hitter. Better know how to drop one down as well, or at least you're trying to get them to think that way as well?
Without question, the development process and getting guys at the major league level, once again, who've been around, it's not something they've ever done before, or they've gone up there and maybe haven't put quite the amount of time they need to, and next thing you know, they put themselves in an 0-1 count and ends up in a strikeout. They go back to, I should have never, that first pitch was the best pitch I'm going to see for a week. That's usually how it plays out. So how to combat that is we continue to teach, and we start talking about here's what will happen, here's how this field will open up. If you can lay one down, you put one down, I'm watching film and I see you do that and you do it successful, you foul it off, we're going to keep throwing them to you. You put one down successful, first you got a chance at a double. Secondly, it's going to make the defense, it's going to make the opposing manager think about how to defend you after that. And it's just smart, man. I feel like I went months in my career without a hit. If they're giving me a free hit, oh man, all day long. So just talking to and let's think about matchups. I mean, those are the fun conversations to have. Hey, this guy has given you fits. I see why there might be a, this guy might be a tough matchup for you, even though it's a lefty lefty. We think that you got a great opportunity here on, to put that. This is when you should do this and kind of have a game plan of why.
I know it's spring training baseball tomorrow, but you have some excitement about having your first game as a manager of the Kansas City Royals.
Yeah, I love competing, and these guys. I mean, it's been pretty abbreviated. We've only had a few days here with the whole club, but. You know, they come in so ready, and I think they want to start seeing competition. They all want the at-bats when it comes to the live, and doing that off your own team's one thing, but being able to compete against another is a completely different topic. We don't have that many days. We need to start figuring this out. We need to put guys, just keep elevating some of those conditions, some of those stressors, you know, make it a little bit tougher situation, and out there is about as tough as it gets this time of year.
Yeah, there it is, Mike Matheny. They get ready. We'll see if they apply some of those things in that game as they'll go. You heard Todd Lebo there at the end, and they've got an inner squad today. They've got games tomorrow. And so, you know, we'll see what they do in those games. But I do like the fact that Mike Matheny is open to dropping down a bunt. And not even open to it seems to champion it, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. He's an advocate of the thing. It was interesting. He talked about to me, that's the only element I can think of in sports where, like, the more experience you have, the longer the adjustment period is. What's a parallel to that? The shift and the bunt, and that's something that the younger the players are coming up, they've all done it, and it's the old guys. He talked about, you know, if you've been looking around and you see the same thing behind you for 10 years, it's a little bit of an adjustment to look back and not see that guy in the usual spot.
Yeah, a guy like Hunter Dozier, who played only shortstop his whole life, then the Royals played him at only third base, and then they moved him over to first base, and they sent him out to the outfield. Now Hunter Dozier gets drafted. He plays all those spots right away.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He's got a chance. Like, listen, we're not sure where you're going to fit, but we know you're a good enough athlete to do this, and so we're going to have you play right, left, first, third, and we're going to make you one of those guys, and that's going to make you a more valuable player, and it could even shorten your time to get to the big leagues because we can use you at any one of those four spots that we might need you. Once you're bat ready, then you can do that. Well, I think it's the same thing. This is what we've talked about for several years now. People are like, well, we got to put a line behind second base, and the third baseman can't go across this line, and the shortstop can't go past this line. And, like, I hate that, right? I hate that. Why? Why would you take away? Because they've gotten smart on defense. Let the game correct itself. And if the Royals have a power hitter now, an 18-year-old power hitter that they take in the fourth round, and he turns out he's going to be a stud and he's coming up, they're telling him, you've got to get in the cage and work the bunt. Don't just goof it around. Get good at it. Make it an arsenal because you're always going to be a pull hitter. They're going to shift on you, and this is going to give you 5 hits a year if you can drop this down. And it'll take the shift off 10 times during the year, right? Yeah. If you just do it, or it'll take the shift off completely if you become great at bunting. They're not going to give you just as like why would – this is what I don't get. From an offensive standpoint, why wouldn't you be imploring everybody in your organization? They're done out here at 1 on the field. You can't stay 15 extra minutes and take, what, 50, you know, 30 to 50 extra pitches in the cage and set down bunts and work on, you know, take 100 to take down the third base side and 100 to take down the first base side. And at what? Those machines will throw a pitch every 15, 20 seconds?
Yeah.
So a 100 will take you, you know, what, three per minute? Will take you maybe 4 per minute? Will take you 15 minutes?
Yeah.
Like, you can't put 15 minutes a day or twice a week or 3 times a week into being able to get that shift off you so you can rake? Come on.
And add 10 or 20 points to your
Yes.
Can't you see the long-term advantage when it comes time to renegotiate your deal? Would you rather hit 320 or 270 or 280?
Okay, we talk about the statistical revolution. We're all looking for what's that thing? What's the number that's the hidden gem that makes us a better team? The A's started it with on-base percentage, and then it was defense. You could get guys. They're on-base percentage. You weren't having to pay for how valuable they really are. Everybody caught up to it. I'll give you something you can do. Bunt. Bunt when no one's over there. Listen, it's the same thing as being able to walk. if they tell you, listen, get a good pitch to hit, and you add 10 walks a year or 20 walks a year, and you're adding, you know, 20 points of on base to your batting, to your OBP, right? All of a sudden, you go from being a 315 on base guy to a 335. You just went from making $3 million a year to making six.
Yeah. And
because you're that much more valuable. Yeah.
And unlike the walk, so, this actually moves other guys up.
Yes.
If you can do it.
Yes. And so now in this situation, you're telling me like you won't do something that could add $3 million to your salary? That's how you pitch it to the kid that's 18.
Right.
Right. Listen, this is going to make you millions of dollars. If you can bunt well enough to the side that you need to bunt it to, then they're not going to shift on you and you're going to get free base hits. And you're going to improve your batting average by 10 points, 15 points, and you're going to improve your on-base percentage by 15 points. Why wouldn't you do that? And as a team, as an organization, the Rays unearthed the opener as a way to really buy themselves past having a starting pitcher. We're gonna open with a guy, max effort to get through the top of the order. Then we'll turn it into a guy who goes cruise control, and we try to get five from him. Hopefully we got 1 2/3 out of the first guy. Now we get five from the next guy. We're in the same spot we would have been with just a good, really good starting pitcher. We're 6 2/3 of the way there, and now we finish it off with a bullpen. And they found a way to basically create a better starting pitcher. The next guy only has to go through the lineup twice. He doesn't have to see the top of the order a third time. And if he is seeing anybody a third time, it's the bottom of the order. It's just mathematical sense. Well, why isn't having a guy who they shift on learn to bunt the moment he gets in your organization and work on bunting so he can do it? Why isn't that just the same kind of statistical and monetary smart decision that the Rays came up with the opener? It's exactly the same thing.
Yeah, it's a hitting equivalent to it. And a team like an organization like the Royals, they should be one of the first teams to embrace it. Let the other teams as the bullpen. The Royals were so great with the bullpen. Then you started seeing the teams that had the money start trying to do the same thing, and they had to kind of find another way to go at it. Let the Yankees and Red Sox and Dodgers get around to this thing later while they're getting bashers to hit the ball with the fence and off the wall. Make that up in a different way and get the edge on them while you can.
Yeah.
Because they're going to catch you at some point.
Yes. Yes. I mean, that's if they're sitting around scheming and trying to figure out ways to be better as an organization, this is a way to be better. Make it an organizational philosophy. And when you're finding out the makeup of guys, make sure they're open-minded to the idea of maybe bunting against a shift if they're guys that are going to be pull hitters. Ryan O'Hearn, we'll hear the whole conversation with Ryan O'Hearn next hour, but I asked O'Hearn, as he was talking about the shift and how it would frustrate him at times, I asked O'Hearn if bunting was part of his game.
I would love for that to be a part of it. Here's the thing, which I should be better at, is when I do decide to drop a bunt out, I think I tried one time last year against the Cardinals in St. Louis, and it didn't work, then it's like, well, I just gave him a bat away.
Right.
So, that's the thing you got to battle and get better. I saw Valoria come up and do it last year a few times. He's good at it. And, I definitely want to.
Is there an organizational philosophy? Do they tell you, hey, go do this?
They would love for me to do it, I'm sure. And we talked about it a lot last year. But, you just got to do it. You got to do it. And until you have, I think it's one of those things that when you get one down and you get a hit, then maybe your mind frame might change about a little bit.
But it's hard, right? That's the one thing as fans, just got to commit to it. Just drop down a bunt.
Mm-hmm. It's not that easy. I don't know. I don't know how many bunts I've put down in the last 5 years of my career. Maybe three. I think it's something you got to commit to.
So, in the last 5 years of his career in the Kansas City Royals, he's put down three bunts. It's clearly not an organizational philosophy before now, if it even is now.
And you have to wonder why. They clearly understood in 2014 the need to find areas to improve. Why didn't they start with that even before the shift thing came about?
Because it's the culture. And the culture is you're on the team to hit home runs, hit a home run. Yet the culture now says it didn't used to. It used to be take your bat off your shoulder and swing the bat. People used to criticize Frank Thomas for walking too much. They'd criticize Ted Williams for not, oh, you can go out and reach that pitch and drive it the other way. You should be driving the ball. No, now we recognize take the walk. Number one, only swing at the really good pitches and take the walk. The on-base percentage is really, really important towards winning the game. So now everybody celebrates the walk. So the culture says it's okay to walk now.
Yeah.
So now you walk, but the culture has yet to say it's okay to bunt. And that's where you have to change the culture in your organization to say we are going to steal 80 hits as an organization this year, and we're going to improve our team on base because everybody is going to be – everybody that they would ever think about shifting is going to become an outstanding bunter.
There's a picture of – I can't think of who the Dodgers player is that had this shirt. And it said, how to bunt. And then it says, one, don't. Two, hit a dinger. Now, you can be that way for the Los Angeles Dodgers, I guess, but that alone shows you where the culture it was in baseball just within the last couple of years. There are still people that are like, bunt? What are you talking about? Hit one over the fence.
Yeah, and the bunt has been rightfully shamed by the statisticians when it comes to giving up an out just to advance a guy. But we're not talking about bunting to give yourself up and get a guy from first to second, which is something you should be able to do late in games when you know one run is the difference in either winning the game or at least continuing the game, tying the game. So you should be able to do it for that anyway. There's no reason to be bunting in the first, second, third, fourth, fifth inning. There's no reason to. For me, I wouldn't bunt until the seventh inning, right? Because until you get to the seventh inning, and you better have a lights-out pen if you're playing for one run in the seventh inning, you better know you're not giving up any more runs. So I get it. So it's been rightfully put in its place when it comes to a weapon for just advancing a runner. It's bad business to do that. In that case, try to draw a walk or hit a dinger. Get two runs instead of one run. Yes, the T-shirt's right. But when it comes to increasing your batting average, because it's not just the batting average you get from that hit. It's the batting average you get when the shift has to come back around and they're not there, and it's all the hits you can then play to your strength and pull it into what is now an opening. Instead of the third baseman playing short field and catching the ball and taking away your hit, that's now a hit. That's now a base hit.
It's like football. You know, play action, you keep running it, and then so when they play the run, you hit them with the play action pass. I mean, it's to some degree, the baseball equivalent of that is certainly in play if you do it accurately, or do it at least efficiently.
But you've got to change the culture.
Yeah.
The culture for the last 5 years, Ryan O'Hearn proves it, is not one that the big, strong guy is going to take a bunt, is going to bunt to get that shift off him. He's not going to do it. By the way, am I the only one that's really scared talking about getting the shift off and that like we're just one consonant away from real trouble?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on.
It's probably safe.
We will take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about some of the stuff that's leaking out about the collective bargaining agreement. 17 games, an extra playoff round, good, bad for the Chiefs. What does it mean? We'll talk about that next here in the program.
The program with Soren Petrov.
He's really good. And I don't know if you know this. He's kind of a colorful fellow that also creates some interest that makes it fun.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Just kidding. I'm here. You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB as we are broadcasting for the final day here in Surprise, Arizona. We'll probably bring home at least one conversation from spring training for tomorrow. Still to come, Dayton Moore in the 5 o'clock hour. Next hour, we are going to hear from Brad Keller, Hunter Dozier, Ryan O'Hearn. That's coming up in the 3 o'clock hour, 4 o'clock hour college basketball talk with Blair Kirkhoff. News coming out that the playoffs, the CBA, something we've been hearing about for a while, but now it looks like it's working its way there. And by the way, they want to have the CBA done before the end of the league year, which is like March 18th, I think it is when it comes around, and that they're getting closer. You know, I heard somebody said it's on a knife's edge. you know, we're getting things done. We're getting close. We hope to have it done, but it's just on, it's on the razor's edge, right, as to whether or not it's going to get done. Like, I don't get it. If you're leaking out details, and I don't think you're on the razor's edge. 17-game season, just 3 preseason games. I like this one. 17-game season will be accompanied by just 3 preseason games. Clark Hunt, chairman of the Kansas City Chiefs, said in mid-November that reducing the preseason is something, quote, everybody would be in favor of. So, you know, they're quoting him as one of the reasons, one of the you know, guys behind it. But this is coming out, Sports Illustrated report, all kinds of different reports. Adam Schefter, that they're getting closer. And only one team with a first-round bye, good or bad for the Kansas City Chiefs?
I'm going to say good, because I think they're going to have the number one seed.
Yes.
A lot.
Yes.
So they're yes. they're gonna have that benefit more than probably any other team in football.
One of the stories I saw wrote it up that, like, why would you expose Patrick Mahomes the face? They took this year's playoffs and they said this year Patrick Mahomes would have had to have, the Chiefs would have had to have played the Steelers. That would have been the extra one in the AFC. They'd had a home game against the Steelers. Why would you expose Patrick Mahomes to another game potentially injuring himself? Well, one, the league would say, well, it's another game of Patrick Mahomes on TV. Do you know how many people tune in to watch Patrick Mahomes? Mm-hmm. So we're okay. Listen, you can't run your sport with everybody wrapped in bubble wrap. Injuries are part of the game. You got to live with it. They certainly don't want Patrick Mahomes hurt. The Chiefs don't want him hurt, but they want him playing the game. Nobody was tuning in to see him stand on the sideline and cheer Matt Moore, right? Right. They want him out there playing.
Yeah.
But I think that – From a league standpoint, if it, number one, when they're the 2 seed, he's got to go play. If they're 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, he's got to go play. But if he's the 1 seed, and from our vantage point as a Chiefs fan, I do think the Chiefs are going to be the 1 seed more than they've ever been the 1 seed in this franchise's history. I think there's going to be a lot of years under Patrick Mahomes. What, maybe 50-50? You know, maybe every other year type of deal, yeah, right? Yeah. I don't think that's unrealistic to expect. Not that they'll go to the Super Bowl every year, but that they could be the 1 seed.
Sure.
And when they are, you got a great chance of winning. You get that bye, and you're moving on.
I love it.
Oh, I love it too. 17 games, neutral site. A lot of people think that's one of the things Clark Hunt said, that 17th game, he said that to me at the Super Bowl, would be a neutral site game. And, you know, so that means, now think about this, it's actually only 16 extra games, right? I had somebody tell me, whoa, I mean, you can't do neutral sites. Where are you going to put them all? There's 32 games. No, you got to play somebody. There's 16 extra games that this would add to the NFL schedule. So 16 neutral sites so that everybody plays 8 at home, 8 on the road, and 1 at a neutral site. That would create kind of an interesting scheduling dynamic, right, that you got to put together. It's already difficult to create schedules, but think about that. We got to get a neutral site for everybody.
Would they have just 1 week where everyone, this is the neutral site week, and they play it up as some, hey, let's all play.
I don't think so. Site.
You don't think they spread it out?
I think you immediately get 8 in London. I've been told by people around the league that the idea is to get to 8 games in London and sell it as a season ticket package and start training London fans about, you know, here's your fall. You're going to go to 8 games. Plan your vacations accordingly. Plan around when there are games. It would be different teams. As we know, the Jaguars are going to play 2 games there. And I think eventually it's going to be the Jaguars that are that team. But you start to train the fans for an 8-week home schedule. And so I think you would get 8 in London and maybe even 8 in another town if they're thinking they're going to get 2 teams out there eventually or what have you. But I think 8 of those games would go there and you would sell a season ticket to London. And then I think the other 8 games would be wherever, Mexico City, other markets that you want to go and try and test out. And maybe it's just fun little neutral site games and big stadiums, big college stadiums in the NFL, or just events. Give fans... Yeah, Chiefs Raiders are in New Orleans 1 year. Just to see how many Chiefs and Raiders fans will go, you know, stock up New Orleans. I don't know. I mean, I think you open up a lot of possibilities. I think it's coming. And I think our initial reaction to everything as human beings is change is bad. And I think change is good. More football. more football that counts? Wait a minute, you're telling me I get two extra playoff games at the end of the year and I get 16 more real regular season NFL games? If you're not for this, I question whether you really love football. I will take more football.
And
there's, yeah, go ahead.
And the seven seed over the last night, since they went to the four divisions in 02, seven seeds, 9-7. It is like you're allowing some schlep into the field.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. All right, we will take a break. When we come back, we switch things up. Let's go back to baseball. Brad Keller, Royals starter. A lot of high hopes for Brad Keller. We're going to talk to him next here in the program.
It's the Jazz End of the Hour Question on the Half Shell. Sponsored by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
All right, with a minimum of 15 decisions, what pitcher had the highest single-season one-loss percentage? Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.